In tech we trust. It's the people in charge we're not sure about.
Hi everyone, and welcome in our episode 8 already of In Tech We Trust podcast. And as our motto says, it's the people in charge we're not sure about. Well, this week, this actually really is an issue because we have 5 hosts on the podcast and I'm the only one standing. As you have heard some giggling in the background, we will have awesome guests, but let me explain what's happening this week. We have Rickatron, who is enjoying a well-deserved holiday in Portugal. We have Gabe and Mark that are traveling, and we have Nigel, which is usually running the show for us as the main host, who is attending Storage Field Day number 6. So Nigel cannot be on the podcast as well. I've seen they have an awesome set of companies coming to Storage Field Day. I have them in front of me here. We have Avir, Store Magic, T-Gile, Coho, Nexenta, Pure Storage, Nimble, and NEC. I have no idea what NEC does, but apparently they have been on the show 4 years ago at Tech Field Day 3. And I am excited to finally see Nexenta there as one of the presenters, because I think they're doing a pretty good job with their ZFS stuff. So busy this week. It was busy last week. We had NetApp Insight Las Vegas, IBM Edge in Boston, and TechAd EMEA in Barcelona. And Nigel and I were in Powering the Clouds, formerly known as SNW, where we recorded with Martin and Chris. And I do have to apologize about the audio quality of last week. We'll try to, we found some tricks to maybe make it better. We could re-edit the podcast of last week because you can barely listen to it, but the content was good. That was very good. So yeah, this week we had Dell World in Austin, Texas, and I've seen the pictures of V Barbecue that Scott Hansen throws, and man, I gotta tell, this is on my bucket list. V Barbecue in Austin, Texas, this is my community bucket list number one right now. And not to forget, we would almost forget it because it's already Thursday, and most people are flying back home from Paris, where there was OpenStack Summit. And that brings me to my two guests, because I do want to talk a little bit about OpenStack this week. First of all, I have a NetApp system engineer head geek for today, Melissa Palmer. Hi, Melissa.
Hey, Hans. How are you?
Melissa, next to being just system engineer, and just as actually a really bad word here, at NetApp, you're also creative director of the Virtual Design Master Challenge. Why don't you briefly introduce me to the Virtual Design Master Challenge here?
Sure. So the Virtual Design Master Challenge is a lot like your typical reality show like Survivor or Chopped, but instead of making people eat bugs and live in the wilderness, we're making them do virtualization-based designs, then defend them to a panel of judges in a kind of mini VCDX fashion.
Wow.
So, yeah, it's a lot of fun. And we've had a lot of great people be involved with it, from all the creative staff to all our competitors. And we actually had Renee, who's VCDX 133, step up for our grand prize this year. So our grand prize winner, Tim, he is getting his VCDX defense fees paid for, as well as mentoring from Renee on his VCDX journey.
That is great news. So you're actually kicking people off the challenge every week?
Yeah, so we vote people off the island every single week. So we get down to about 3 people in our last round and make them duke it out for the title of Virtual Design Master.
Wow. How much have you learned?
I've learned a lot because behind the scenes, I'm making all the crazy challenges, and I don't feel like it's completely right if we give them a challenge that we can't do ourselves. So kind of on the back end, we're taking a look at it and we're like, all right, how would we do this? So I've learned a lot from creating the challenges as well as looking at everybody else's solutions. I mean, it's great to see other people's designs and engineering methodologies and you know, when you see something, you're like, wow, you know, I wouldn't have thought of it that way, but that's a fantastic idea. You just kind of grow as an engineer and architect the more exposure you have.
Yeah, that's great. Last question about the Design Master Challenge. Give me the worst you've made them do.
Worst we made them do? OpenStack with multiple hypervisors and multiple instances with multiple OSs was pretty brutal.
That is brutal.
And we did make them do a nested VMware environment on a single host for the final challenge.
Uh-huh.
So that was pretty bad too.
Wow. So we already had the word OpenStack here. We already had OpenStack Summit here being mentioned. We had someone, and I was actually looking to find someone that was at OpenStack Summit that was not working for a vendor. And I find that person, which is Caroline McCrory. Hi, Caroline, or AKA Miss Cloud of Caroline, Senior Director at GigaOM Research.
Hello, Hans.
You've managed to just giggle for 5 minutes, and you actually had to stop yourself from chiming in on that Design Master Challenge, did you?
That sounded so cool.
Hey, well, when we open up season 3 competitors, I'll let you know. You might as well throw your hat in the ring.
I'm not super tech, but boy, can I could actually probably add a different spin to the judging, because I would turn around and go, okay, in what business case would you actually use that solution?
Well, the funny part is our business case is usually something like the world's under a zombie apocalypse and we need to evacuate the human race. So,
OpenStack Summit Paris, Caroline, how was your week? Just summarize it in 2 lines.
You know, it's great to see that it's grown like so much, you know, and there were a lot of tables, there were a lot of really interesting discussions. The keynotes were really, really good. It was good to see, you know, like BMW there talking about how they are using, you know, OpenStack, you know, it was very encouraging to see the community has grown and the user pool has grown. And also it was also good to see the, like people like Randy Byers, you know, with Cloud Scaling being acquired by EMC, and then MetaCloud that got acquired by Cisco. It was good to talk to everyone to about the momentum that OpenStack is having, but at the same time, what's happening in as far as consolidation, right? How far is this going to push, you know, the project forward? And what was disappointing for me though was I was hoping to see more European companies with tables at the show, and I saw still a lot more American vendors there rather than European vendors.
Mm-hmm.
So, because there's a very big difference with doing business in Europe that I think that a lot of the vendors who don't have a presence in Europe miss. You know, they don't understand, you know, the data sovereignty laws, they don't understand data protection laws, and so they tend to design technical solutions that don't understand the complexities of doing business in all the individual countries in Europe. Mm-hmm. So I was hoping to see more of those sort of discussions rather than just the technical religious discussions happen. Mm-hmm. So it'll just be interesting to see what happens as the community grows and matures.
Yeah, there's two other challenges. Every single time that I talk to American companies in general that want to work with European customers, is that there's a big difference in scale.
Mm-hmm.
And don't forget that every single state, as you call it, is a different country over here, exactly. Has different languages and totally different cultures. I think one of the reasons you probably see less European companies is that it's still pretty much a vendor play today.
Mm-hmm.
There's not that many direct customers except for a few really big providers, maybe in Europe. I think you have more customer to vendor relationships in the state, and as most of the vendors are all stateside, they're not really coming here. Does that make sense to you?
Oh no, absolutely. Yeah, I agree with you. Most of the vendors that are at the table are being American-led vendors, and I was, because they had startup areas too, right? And I was hoping to see more Europeans at the startup side, you know, because I was on the other side of the hall, you mm-hmm. know, like on the sites, and I was hoping to see more of them there. There were a few, I mean, you know, like GigaSpaces was there, you know, with Nati and all that. But I was just hoping to see like some more fresh blood, you know.
Yeah. from a timing perspective, and for me it's weird. I'm really new and not even into OpenStack today. That so confession there. But we'll probably make more and more focus on it in the next coming episodes and probably this year. This for me feels at the same time as I was just 10 years ago. I got into VMware at about ESX 2.1 in 2004. Mm-hmm. It kind of feels like that same point. There's people starting to use it. I'm not sure how much in production, but I feel like that I'm not necessarily late to the table.
No, not at all. And I think there's a lot of parallels here between the adoption of virtualization and taking that to the next level, which with OpenStack, the adoption of, you know, the public or private or hybrid cloud. Mm-hmm. I think it's in that spot right now. Some places they've started to go production on it, but a lot of people are still testing it in the lab and testing it with their non-critical workloads. So yeah, there's definitely a lot of parallels between the way we saw virtualization evolve and the way OpenStack's evolving.
Mm-hmm. So if you look at it from an engineer and even maybe up to the CIO level of how long can I stall having to be part of the OpenStack community? Because if you go into this is all new. There's not that much of information. There's not a lot of people that know about it. If you go into OpenStack today, it costs a lot of energy that mm-hmm. you may not have, and you probably not won't need it at a customer site in the next 2 or 3 years, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even see that as being an issue. I think it's just more, you know, so I moderated a panel called the Thunderdome, and it was called the OpenStack Thunderdome. You know, Jesse Proutman had this great idea from Blue Box, you know, that we should do this Thunderdome, and it had Chris Kemp from Nebula, it had Chris McGowan from Piston, you know, we would have had Josh McKenzie, but Josh, who was also the other co-founder of Piston, but Josh, you know, went off to Pivotal and gave up his board seat, and he's now taken the Pivotal board seat instead. Then we had Randy Bias, you know, from Cloud Scaling, we had Alex Friedland from Mirantis, and, you know, the joke was they are like the godfathers of OpenStack, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you know, and they have seen, they all have a solution for OpenStack, but they all have very specific use cases that they are addressing in mm-hmm. OpenStack.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that we all agreed on is that, one, OpenStack may not be right for every company that's out there. So mm-hmm. it's not a case of whether an organization, how long can they stall to adopt it? They may not have to adopt it at all.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it just really depends on what it is they're doing. And the other thing, too, is there are so many distributions of OpenStack that it's between now and, say, 2016, and Simon Wardley also says this quite a bit now, is there is going to be a consolidation in the space. And it's going to be who is left standing. And this is, by the way, also one of the issues with Europe not getting to test or really enjoy some of the innovations that comes out of Silicon Valley, because it innovates and collapses so quickly. When I say collapse, I also mean by consolidation so quickly. Mm-hmm. Some of these startups get something so innovative, it comes out, and before it even reaches Europe, they're acquired. Or they're acquired and then, you know, embedded into something else. And so there's a lot of this that's happening. There's a lot of contraction that's happening. Then from another perspective is, with virtualization, there was a huge cultural and business process shift for people to adopt virtualization. There are some mm-hmm. industries that are only now starting to look at using virtualization. We're talking, you know, more of the manufacturing and agriculture and things like that, even in the US, right? So OpenStack is a very different way of thinking. Think about when Linux first started, and then, you know, it was this whole open source project. But the thing with Linux was it was also being, you know, driven by Linus. The OpenStack Foundation has always chosen not to be a benevolent dictator.
Mm-hmm.
And they also try to provide stewardship, but they haven't been very good at organizing themselves. And you know, like, for example, the entire board agrees that Neutron needs to have some kind of focus, and there should be core things in the OpenStack framework that works, like networking, like storage, like compute. But with so many different options, because they also want more people to use it, it's very complicated.
Yeah.
So
yeah, exactly.
Like you said, Hans, what does an organization have to do to take it on today? A lot. do you really want, if your core business is not IT, do you really want to go and hire 50 Python engineers so that you can actually, you know, fork from trunk or do something like that to do work? Or are you going to end up going to buy one of the distributions? And what happens?
Exactly.
And what happens if one of those distributions disappears? Your business is going to be using something that's disappeared effectively, right?
Mm-hmm. You bring up a few good points that I want to chime in on. The looking back at Linux is a really good example there. What needs to happen in this ecosystem not to become the next Linux of 75 distributions and maybe one or two of them really get any commercial value out of it? That was my point, like, 2-3 weeks ago when cloud scaling got acquired. I thought, well, I think EMC might have acquired a new VMware here as in the ecosystem leader. EMC could become the new ecosystem leader because Red Hat is not capable of executing on that. Do we need an ecosystem leader here? That's actually the bigger question.
I think an ecosystem leader would help to be that sort of benevolent dictator. But at the same time, I think that a lot of it also still has to come from the foundation, and here's why. We're now getting to the millennials are also joining us in the workforce now, right? And the millennials are taking to coding and stuff a lot more, also because it's a lot easier for them now to do coding than when we all started in our careers, for example. You know, they can now go to GitHub and there's so many ways they can look at someone else's code and add to it, and they can start to build something. Whereas for us, we had to understand Unix. We had to build our own systems. Then only we could put the programming languages and compilers on top of it, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So from that, you can see that if with the framework for the OpenStack projects and everything else, if there is an active stewardship from the foundation to be agnostic and vendor agnostic, I think that the leading vendor who becomes the primary sponsor would end up steering the project to the business cases and to the customers that they see, rather than the technology being built for the needs of the masses and then being tuned for everyone else. Like take, for example, you know, Chris Camp on stage said there's now 800 or 900 configuration options for Nova Compute. Well, as an enterprise, I don't want to be thinking about 800 to 900 options of Nova Compute. It is, you know, I basically want to go to someone, you know, whatever the vendor, and say, look, this is my business. This is the services that I'm offering. This is what I need the infrastructure pieces to do for me. And it should deliver what they need. They shouldn't have to be the one to sit there and go, okay, I now need to fight with all the other OpenStacky companies to hire 10 Python developers to help me make sense of this. Because I'll tell you right now, distributed systems is very different and very complicated. Just because you have a Python developer doesn't mean that they understand distributed systems and how what they're building reflects in the whole architecture that they're building. And you guys know this, right? You see enough people who may understand virtualization but don't necessarily understand storage.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
I think another good point is, you know, talking about these distributions, maybe we see more specialized distributions. Maybe someone comes up with a distribution that's more geared for the financials, or someone comes up that's more geared towards research and development, or someone comes up with one that's more geared toward healthcare. Maybe that's another way we see this kind of refinement of distributions and, you know, thought leadership in the space.
Here's a problem I have with that. If everyone has their, it's almost going to be unique selling point, but they're going to be focused at a certain solution. How do I, as a customer, find the tree in the forest if everyone's doing something different?
This is like the classic problem that's already being faced at the moment. One of the panels that I was on with that Greg Neerman was the moderator on, and it was, you know, should OpenStack be a service or a distribution, which is one of the things that you brought up earlier. I'm sorry, but I can't remember her name now. She stood up and she asked us a question. She leads like the product software product development team at Rackspace. Uh-huh. And she was saying, you know, obviously Rackspace provides OpenStack, you know, based services. And she's starting to feel like she might have her own distribution now because she's having to add certain customizations for the types of services that they provide.
I actually listened to the podcast this morning and I I so your recording you did on the panel is this week's Speaking in Tech podcast. It was a really good panel. I loved it. And I actually noted her question down here for in my show notes for asking you. And I remember the question was, how do little clouds grow up to be big clouds? Yeah. And how about us early adopters?
That's exactly it. Because she was basically feeling like because of her business needs, she's starting to almost build her own distribution. And then, you know, but what happens? What happens when it becomes too big? How does she end up continuing to benefit from what's coming out of the different projects? And so one of the themes that I heard from many people that were either getting their feet wet or were already deploying OpenStack, even some vendors who were thinking about adding OpenStack to their portfolios of cloud software, all were saying, right now, the projects, you know, like Juno, you know, things like that, they're all coming out every 6 months. That's really aggressive for an enterprise to want to have to upgrade every 6 months. Mm-hmm. So if you are a company that's planning to offer your own distribution, how do you cope with that? Do you tell your customers that, okay, the projects are coming out every 6 months, but you only have to do it, you know, once a year, once every 2 years? Like, when will OpenStack get to the point where there's enough momentum where there are not so many fixes that are coming up mm-hmm. in every version that everyone has to do because something's going to fundamentally change or whatever scripts that you wrote is now going to be, you know, like completely dead because something's changed.
Is that your value add as an integrator / you know, distribution offer? I'm going to give you an easy method to upgrade this distribution every 6 months so you can get all those fixes and you can get the new features and you can get access to the new projects.
Well, but that's probably also a question for you, Melissa, as you're probably a little bit more technical into all the projects that are in there. Don't you see things just missing and totally changed today?
Exactly.
So it's not even only updating, it's also things that just disappear or change overall.
Things disappear or brand new additions.
So give me examples there, what has already happened and what you could see happening in the future there.
For example, Manila, which is a file services thing. I don't know if it's quite a full project yet, but you can actually download it, install it, and use it. Let's say I'm running this enterprise distribution and I really have a need at this point to get these file services. Well, how do I integrate a project that's just coming out or isn't quite a project yet into my distribution? Can I really do that or do I need to wait for my distribution to be updated?
Yeah, and that's a big issue. And actually, it's good that you actually bring up Manila. It's supposed to be, you know, this file system as a service sort of play. And here's the issue that OpenStack has always had. You have a lot of technical people that want to build things to solve technical problems, but most of the people who are building out these projects, and they're probably all going to shoot me when I say this, haven't come from operations.
Exactly.
Most of these people don't come with a business mindset. They come with an engineering mindset. And you know mm-hmm. what? I'm guilty of it too because I have an engineering background, you know. And so I tend to think about, oh, something's broken. I know how I can fix it. But just because of the way I want to fix it doesn't mean it's applicable to everyone else. Like, you know, the three of us could probably fix a virtualization problem or a bug that we see very differently because of our, you know, we are also biased based on the experiences we've had from other things that we've ever done. And so this is why I think that the foundation needs to bring that sort of thought leadership from an ops perspective so that the requests that are coming in, and also, by the way, there are a lot more customers now who are also contributing reviews and code.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So I think that if the foundation were to implement a way, and you know, and the TCs have to follow this, where customers or users of OpenStack are the first ones that get to submit their changes and their pull requests, and it's reviewed before, you know, someone who's just from an engineering mindset would make the code more representative of use cases that are relevant.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's almost like we need some sort of, you know, architectural oversight that includes the business drivers and why we're actually doing these things. Because we're doing lots of wonderful, cool things with OpenStack, but why are we doing them? What problem are we trying to solve?
In a similar note, I saw a blog post today of Scott Lowe, and he said, well, I really want to contribute to OpenStack. I don't know where. And then he found out that the documentation today is unreadable. It's pure code-based, engineer-based documentation, which is not what documentation should be. So he said, I've written a few books. I've written blog posts for over 9 years. I've probably read thousands of manuals. Maybe that's my angle to help in. And I think we've hit here on 2 points. Documentation is one, but that the business side, from the customer perspective, we probably need more from all different angles rather than the technology angle as such.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And he actually covers in his article how easy it is to get involved with OpenStack documentation. It's not that hard to get yourself set up, and they have tons of documentation things marked as documentation bugs. So if, you know, for people like us, the bloggers and the community members, it's a really easy way for us to contribute and bring that business-based and architectural mindset to the project.
And also, I like the I like the whole thing that they're trying to do with like RefStack, you know, as well. And that's a big deal. I think that they should have something like RefStack so that other vendors or anyone who's looking to build a distribution can actually measure themselves. Because otherwise, everybody's going to do their own thing, and then you'll find that, you know, there's all this, you know, contraction and collapsing of like all the different distributions is going to happen, which I think, while it's great to see everyone's innovating, it causes more confusion to the people who are not part of it. You know, it's like the Silicon Valley distortion field.
But when you're like, you're right, we almost need the benevolent dictator to kind of gently steer in the right direction and make sure the effort's getting put into the core projects and we fix them before we come up with all this other crazy stuff.
Yeah, and then, you know, they just, I think they're trying, you know, the problem is a lot of the TCs are also like board members, like, well, mm-hmm. not a lot of them, most of the key ones are, and they end up, I think it's a conflict of interest. I just think it's a conflict of interest. And you know, like Swift is now part of the trademark. You know, okay, not everybody wants to use the Swift code. They just don't. Right. You know, using the Swift API is fine, not a problem. But why are you forcing people to use a piece of code that may not be good? And the thing is, who are they going to sue? Who are they going to sue if it doesn't work? We're a foundation. You can't afford to get the lawsuits if something goes down. And that's the problem. I don't think these people understand that it's not that enterprise companies don't want to innovate. It costs them money because they have SLAs to deliver. They're not just here, you know, sitting there and figuring out, oh, I'm going to build this new cloud thing because it's so easy. It's like, no, software is hard. Cloud is even more complicated.
Right.
It's just like, really? Okay.
Well, there's one side note I still want to make here is we see a lot of budget. We see a lot of people going into OpenStack. That was not the fact 2-3 years ago.
No, not at all.
And so just as a side note, I saw this week Apache releasing CloudStack 4. Bloody, 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 blah. Is CloudStack still competing with OpenStack? Are they even relevant somehow? Is it going to be a niche player? What's their relevance today?
You can't say they're out of the game yet. You can't say they're not a competitor because technically speaking, they are. Do you see the enthusiasm and the massive summits and the massive effort as much as you see with OpenStack? Not necessarily, but I wouldn't completely count them out of the game yet.
They have customers. That's the thing. They have customers and they have, but I don't know. They've got a few like in Frankfurt and stuff like that too, by the way, which is quite interesting. But they don't talk about it very much. And I'm wondering if it's primarily because those are already Citrix houses and that's why, you know, there's not a lot of discussion about it.
Mm-hmm. If I look at the ecosystem around it, the only ones in infrastructure we kind of really know are small players. I mean, Gritstore, SolidFire, XIO, Karingo, VMTurbo, no big names at all, except maybe for Cloud Foundry for a part, but
that's... Yeah, but you know, a year or two ago, there weren't any big names in OpenStack either. Yeah, so maybe it just needs time to catch up.
Okay. That's a fair point. That's actually an answer to me. But that's gonna make all the big players playing too similar. Well, we've got the same thing with VMware and Hyper-V, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So okay. Point taken. CloudStack is not out of the game. We'll keep following up. Have you seen implementations of CloudStack in the field? Any of you? Customers that are happy with this.
Yes.
Engineers that are happy with it as a solution.
Customers that are happy with it as a solution. I have definitely seen that. But again, the ones that I've seen were already Citrix heavy like companies. Mm-hmm. And so
that's a good point. Yeah.
Right. So It's like they were already happy with what they were getting with Citrix and, you know, their customer support and everything else. And so for them, it was like, okay, you know, I'm going to give CloudStack a go. And they kind of stayed with it. So I haven't spoken to any customers who were, let's say, like a VMware shop who then decided to go and switch to CloudStack as an example. So I can't speak to that.
Yeah. Well, it's not really switching, is it, right?
No, exactly. But, you know,
it would be in the CloudStack environment, it would be. You wouldn't be running it. Yeah, okay. It's not necessarily that in an OpenStack environment, but in a CloudStack, you would be switching, yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Okay. We'll keep it on the side of our eyes, on the radar somehow, yeah? Mm-hmm. I'm not sure we're going to see it a lot in the field, depending on if there's going to be, I think it's going to depend on a brand vendors chiming in or not.
Right.
And I'm not sure they are going to. That's the gut feeling I have with the whole ecosystem happening around OpenStack. If it's so early stage, they're not going to focus on two projects. That's the gut feeling. But
that's true. That's a good point.
Hey, let's move on a little bit to acquisitions and so on. This week we had two parts in the news. First of all, Samsung is buying Proximal Data. So Samsung, the SSD vendor in this case, and Proximal Data is server-side flash caching distributed, blah, 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 kind of a competitor to Pernix Data and Infinio and all the others that today. What I have noticed is that most of the SSD vendors have some kind of caching software already developed or acquired. I see Samsung already has Nvilo Dataplex, which was more for consumer market. Intel has SRT, Smart Response Technology. SanDisk bought FlashSoft in 2012, and they have two products, ReadyCache, ExpressCache. And OCZ acquired SANRAD in 2012 with the VXL software. By the way, OCZ got acquired by Toshiba after filing for bankruptcy. But the point here is that most of the SSD vendors have a caching software acquired or developed in the last 2 to 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
My question is, does it make sense for an SSD manufacturer to buy server-side caching software?
Well, I think it does, because then you can offer the whole solution to your customers. I'm not just offering them an SSD. I'm not just offering them the server-side caching software. I can give them everything. So yeah, I think it does make sense that they all keep buying the software vendors to merge the solution.
But who's going to be their customer in that case? It's not going to be an end customer. An end customer is not buying SSDs by the bunch from the manufacturer.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, I don't know, do they pair with manufacturers?
If I look at my environment today and I am building a virtualization solution, I will look at what my hypervisor will be and maybe the platform to organize it. And if I am building my hardware myself, being Dell, HP, blah, 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 servers, and I'm going to add SSDs, I'm not going to buy the caching software for those SSDs from the manufacturer of the SSDs.
No, you're probably going to use, you know, VMware's caching software, whatever works for your hypervisor.
I probably would. I'd rather have bought proximal data than I would buy the proximal data software from the SSD vendor.
Mm-hmm.
The only way they're going to make money out of this is selling it as OEM solutions to other vendors. I don't see customers buying this from an SSD manufacturer.
Yeah, that's a good point. Do they come in and turn it around and HP OEMs it? When you buy an HP server, you buy the Samsung SSDs and the proximal data software with it.
Yeah, that's
also interesting because, like, look at, you know, we were talking about Seagate, and I know that Seagate has done a few things. Like, for example, you know, disclosure, my husband is CTO at Basho Technologies, which has the company that does, you know, React and React CS. But you can actually see on the Seagate website, they have a solution offering with Basho. And, you know, when I spoke with David Chapo over there, and he was also telling me about, you know, they're now doing, you know, like the pre-testing of, you know, React workloads on Seagate SSDs, and, you know, how it's so much better. And they're trying to do more things like that so that, you know, anyone who's looking for SSD technologies can see what's been but has actually been tested, and they know for sure how it runs and why you should use this combo. But yeah, I guess I should, you know, you're probably right. Would they be buying these sort of disks through someone else, or, you know, are the hardware company, are the SSD manufacturers starting to go into the infrastructure space?
I don't see that happening.
Hmm.
I see acquisitions happening in the flash market, which has happened, by the way. I mean, SanDisk bought Fusion.io. There's a few of those. There's maybe a few mergers there possible, or acquisitions. I don't see them playing more to the top into the servers. I just don't see it happening. On the other hand, I thought proximal data, if they were doing good, I'm not sure, because I don't know how the company was running and how good the technology actually was. But I gave them more chance being independent. Well, it's still single feature software, right? So it probably makes sense to sell at some point. Maybe that point was too early. Maybe it's good for the investors to get out. Pending on this as a question, is this a good or a bad thing for the people that are still in server side caching? Or server-side performance enhancement like Perdix and Infinio and so on, did they just lose a competitor, or did they win? Did they win the fact that they lost a competitor, or are they losing by the fact that there's a stronger competitor entering the market? I'm not sure Samsung can execute on that.
Yeah, that's a good point. Is it? Did they lose a competitor, or did it? One of their competitors get an injection of steroids because now they have Samsung backing them. I think it's going to be really interesting to see how it actually plays out.
Like that analogy.
Yeah, well, I mean, OCZ, for example, was bankrupt, but they're still an independent company under the Toshiba brand today. I'm not sure Proximal Data is going to be a Samsung company or being integrated in a total portfolio as just a product. And a second one in this week's merger and acquisitions is that Riverbed is forking off their SteelStore products, formerly known as Whitewater, which was, by the way, a cloud storage gateway. And they're forking it off to NetApp, so you'll get a new product, Melissa.
Yes, I am. I am getting a new product to add to my tool belt.
Yeah. So this is just very recent news of this week. There's not going to be that much coverage of it in the next few months, as NetApp officially says they want to release the appliance being NetApp branded by Q3 of next year. So they have they gave themselves a whole year to make it a NetApp ready product. Looking forward to it. I think it probably makes more sense to me actually than the LSI acquisition of a few years ago. Does that make sense to anyone?
Yeah, I think just, you know, because I was actually at NetApp Insight last week when the news was announced on the NetApp people. And, you know, kind of NetApp strategy is kind of, you know, your cloud, your data, hybrid cloud. So it really makes sense as, you know, an offering to our customers for in the cloud backup space.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's probably initially going to be backup space, right?
And, right.
I mean, if you have that technology as a cloud gateway, from a company, by the way, that does WAN acceleration, I mean, there's a combination that kind of makes sense here. There's probably more to be expected in the future of it. So we'll see what happens there in the near and long-term future. At least they didn't acquire something they want to have in the field tomorrow. They're going to give themselves some time. Hopefully there's some engineers coming along with the product. And with that, I would very much like to thank my two guests here. Melissa, where can people follow you, stalk you, or... Oh, by the way...
Stalk me.
While we're at it, I hope you can give... I'll give you 2 more minutes for 2 plugs. First of all, what's the project you're doing this month? It's crazy.
Okay. So the project we're doing this month is called hashtag VDM 30 and 30. There's a challenge floating around the internet out there about writing 30 blog posts in 30 days. And the creative staff, you know, me, Eric Wright, Angelo Luciani, and Jonathan Frappier, we kind of were talking on the back end and decided, all four of us, all right, let's do this. Let's write 30 blogs in 30 days. And we got a bunch of people to join it. So we're kind of doing a little mid-year VDM teaser of Virtual Design Master presents 30 blogs in 30 days. So I'm 6 days in. I got my 6th post done. I'm still feeling pretty good about it. And I'm really excited about it. It's a lot of fun.
That's awesome. I mean, it's crazy. I saw you on
Why
Facebook.
Why didn't you join us?
No, I
you could do it.
Yeah, I could, but it's gonna take way too much of my time, and I only sleep two to three hours anyhow. So
you don't need to sleep for more than an hour for a month. Come on.
Yeah, I know. So that was great. I saw it passing by on Facebook. I was like, oh shit.
Yes, you can see my Facebook and my Twitter posts every single day of my blog post, and you know what kind of things I'm learning as I do it.
No, and it's great. It's actually great content. So keep up the good work. 6 days in, you got another 24 to go.
Yep.
Good luck with them. And I'll give you your second plug because you're on our episode number 8. This is a very young podcast, but you have an even younger podcast coming up.
Yes, I have an even younger podcast coming up, as in starting tonight at 10:15. It's me, Exchange Goddess, and at 24x7 IT Connect. We're three ladies that write for Petri, and we have a podcast starting called hashtag Current Status. And what we're trying to do is just kind of talk tech like we usually do, entertain our audience, and hopefully teach them something about current tech environment as well.
Awesome.
So 10:15, we're hashtag Current Status at Current Status number 4, letter U. So you can find us on Twitter and watch our Google Hangout.
And what's in your Twitter handle and blog?
Oh, yes, of course. How could I forget myself? I'm talking about everybody else and plugging everyone else. I'm at vmis33, and you can find me at vmis.net.
Hey, great. Caroline, what are you up to in the next coming weeks and months, and where can people follow you?
I'm actually looking for more analysts who want to write for GigaOm Research and want to join me in adding more operations-centric research out there as opposed to just the strategy-level stuff. I'm looking for people who have done ops and who want to talk about success stories and things like that. So that's one of the things I'm working on. And the other part is I'm, you know, pushing the envelope and challenging vendors to deliver more than just marketecture. That's the fun stuff that I'm working on. Also, you can stalk me at Cloud of Caroline on Twitter. And don't add me to Facebook unless you're a really, really good friend. So Hans, you're in. Melissa,
Yuppie!
You're in. And That's where you can get me. And if you need to email me for wanting to become an analyst, my email address is caroline@gigaom.com.
Okay, Caroline, Melissa, thank you very much for saving the day of In Tech We Trust podcast. And I hope to hear everyone else again next week.
I saw a movie. I was on an airplane with about 150 of my closest friends. It's called 28 Days Later. With all the Ebola stuff in the news, I thought I'd watch a movie about a virus outbreak. It has a great cast: Cillian Murphy, Naomi Harris, Brendan Gleeson, and directed by Danny Boyle, who did Slumdog Millionaire and Trainspotting. I figured I couldn't go wrong. But it made me want to jump off the plane. I thought it was going to be a drama suspense movie about a virus outbreak, but instead it was just a cheesy zombie flick with high volumes of blood and projectile vomiting. And some nudity. And here's a spoiler alert for you. It's male nudity, which is horrifying enough. But my screen was pixelating badly, which meant I had to rewind a bunch. And the rewind controls are awful and are horribly inaccurate. And it just so happens that when the stewardess was asking me if I wanted something to drink, and she was standing slightly behind me and could see everything on my screen, I press the screen to stop rewinding, and there's Cillian Murphy with his legs spread open and his junk showing. It was a very awkward moment. It made me want to jump off the plane, and I totally felt like a perv. And so I'd really like to ask American Airlines what they're doing showing movies of Cillian Murphy's junk, but I've got a movie review to do. If you're looking for a believable movie with a great script, don't watch this movie. If you're looking for a movie about Ebola, don't watch this movie. If you're looking for a movie about how humanity wins in the end, don't watch this movie. But if you're looking for a movie where people's heads get bashed in and blood flies all over the wall, this is the movie for you. And if you're looking for a movie where people are frolicking through a grocery store getting all the whiskey that they want, this is the movie for you. And if you're looking for a movie where a good guy frees a chained-up zombie to attack a bunch of bad guys who stole his girlfriend, this is the movie for you. And if you're okay that none of this makes any freaking sense whatsoever, then this is really the movie for you. And if you want to watch a movie with senseless male nudity, then maybe you're a perv. I saw a movie.